With Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Welcome to Game On. We have a jam-packed hour to come, so we're getting straight into it. In a moment, Irish manager Stephen Kenny will reflect on a major week for our clubs in Europe. Alan Colley and Stephen Kelly are here to discuss that and Jack Grealish's big move, as well as Lionel Messi's next move. Shane McGrath will give us his final thoughts on the All-Ireland hurling semi-finals. Jane Mangan marks our card in racing. And of course, we'll wrap up day 14 at the Olympics and ask if Kelly Harrington can get gold for Ireland this weekend. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Alan Colley, Stephen Kelly, you are both very, very welcome. It has been a great week for Irish football. Alan Colley, I know that you were in the Aviva on Tuesday night and you were also watching both games last night. How impressed have you been with all of the teams, but in particular last night's Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers performances?
Oh, it's been some week, Marie. I'm still on a high. There's such positivity around, obviously, about the league at the moment on the back of those results and performances. And rightly so as well. They've been absolutely brilliant. As you say, I was in the Aviva on Tuesday night. Bohemians were outstanding, and I've watched a lot of Bohemians this year and they have the makings of a really, really good side. They're getting the stage to show that now, and obviously in the Aviva during the week, it's almost as if they're rising to the challenge as well, Marie. No matter what hurdle is coming up against them, they're prepared to try and jump over it, and especially against Pauk, who they would have been major underdogs going into that tie, but they were never fazed. They played the game in the exact same way as if they were playing a normal league game in terms of their approach and how attacking they were. Took the game to the Greek side and showed no fear, and they were absolutely brilliant. Down one on merit, I have to say, towards the end they were hanging on a little bit, as you'd expect. I think once Pauk kind of had a good long look at them and realised we're in a match here, they improved in the second half, and I think the second leg will be very tough. Bohemians have been an absolute joy to watch in the last couple of weeks. Then, as you say, Dundalk to go to Vitesse, another really difficult game. And the first half, I was kind of following it online and thinking they might be up against it here, you know, because obviously Vitesse are a step above as well. But the fact that they went the goal down and hung in, and then obviously Patrick comes up with not only the header was brilliant, but then the moment of magic that's obviously gone viral today. And he has a collection of those goals. For anyone that doesn't know, just YouTube Patrick McIlhenny goals. And as I said, remarked to someone last night, it's almost Matt Letizia standard. He's right up there in terms of his collection of goals as well. So an unbelievable result. And to be fair to Vinnie Peart as well, he's certainly turned things around since he's gone in, and he deserves a huge amount of credit for that. And then I watched the Shamrock Rovers game, and Shamrock Rovers probably had the easier out of the three games in terms of the opposition, because obviously they've dropped down from the Champions League game, but they were absolutely brilliant in how they approached as well. Shamrock Rovers, they totally dominated the game from start to finish, found it difficult to make the breakthrough, to be fair to the Albanians, even though they were trying to frustrate them and stifle them, and there was a bit of dark arts and all that kind of thing that you'd expect in a European tie. They actually defended quite well as well, to be fair to the Albanian side, but just when it was looking like they wouldn't make the breakthrough, a 17 year old comes on, Marie, makes his debut in a European game, scores with almost his first touch, and it was a fitting way to end the week in terms of just where the games have been at, how well the clubs have done, and for a 17 year old to come on, score a goal as well, the place erupted, went mental. And I think what's brilliant about it as well, to have three teams in, I think if you look at the coefficient from all the countries involved, from 32 down to 59, I think it is, we're the only country that has the three teams still left at this stage of the competition. It's been a remarkable week. It's something now that hopefully we can build on, and certainly going into the second legs, it's all to play for in terms of trying to advance into that playoff game with an opportunity to try and get to a group stage. And it's just phenomenal.
It really is, Stephen. It has been a great week.
Amazing. And what an endorsement of Irish football, like the three teams going away, and the style of football they've been playing has been so effective. It's been advanced, it's been on their front foot. They've not been, but they had to defend it in numbers at times and teams go back, but always been trying to play progressive football through the lines, playing forward. It's been so wonderful. And I think just when you think back to not too long ago when we were talking about the league and how teams are struggling with COVID and the games getting back in, now to be in a position now where this finances is coming in, trying to boost everything, it's just wonderful.
It really is. Well, a little bit earlier I caught up with Stephen Kenny, the Republic of Ireland manager. He too was at the game on Tuesday night, and he was also in Tala last night to watch Shamrock Rovers. So I started by asking him how impressed he has been with the performances of the League of Ireland teams in Europe.
Hi Marie. Yeah, it has indeed been a good week, and all of the course, they're only first legs, of course, and you know, eagerly anticipated next week. The three ties are all in the balance, and you know, certainly it was amazing in the Aviva on Tuesday night. playing, and they're terrific, really, really terrific, to beat Pack 2-1. And they totally deserved it. Like, you know, it wasn't the smash and grab. They absolutely deserved to win. And, you know, such a young team, and Key Long has lost some of his best players last year, and, you know, they replaced them, and some of the young players took time to find their feet this season, but they were brilliant the other night. And that's the best I've seen them play. Shamrock Rovers was at that game last night. They didn't play that well, Shamrock Rovers last night, but they won't care. They, you know, the Albanians were difficult to break down. You know, they had a game plan, and the course out there will be different. The climate, of course, is, you know, temperatures will be very high out in Albania, and it's a different mind. But they get that. What a story! You know, Adamo, the young 17-year-old coming off his debut and scoring the winner, and. Brilliant for them. And Dundalk, of course, it was, you know, obviously to be so disappointed to concede that last minute equaliser, because it would have been a famous victory in a way to beat the Stirling, but it's a good result nonetheless.
Yeah,
and unfortunately the away goals don't count anymore, but Patrick McElhenney getting two great goals, you know, Vinny's done terrific since he's come back in, and you know, I think it's you know, it's in the balance for next week.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting. So are you going to these games, I guess, as a football fan, as in one aspect, but the other then looking for potential players?
Yeah, of course. I think, you know, the yardstick that you want to be measured against the European clubs, and you want the players to do well. And, you know, I'm at matches all in tonight. I'm in England, of course, to as the championship starts. So that's you know, it's great to, you know, it was a great couple of weeks. You know, Shamrock Rovers are unlucky in the Champions League, really. They reduced the 2-0 deficit to 2-2 against Slovan Bratislava. But the Europa League conference is something new, something they're trying to understand. But ultimately, qualification brings 3 million to the clubs, which is, you know, terrific prize money. And every round, of course, is significant prize money. So it's there for the three clubs. You know, it's there for the three clubs. And, you would think that, you know, they're all capable of achieving it. Shamrock Rovers are probably have the best route and probably have the best chance out of the three clubs, but all of the three clubs are capable of getting there. And, you know, it's terrific.
It really is. And you mentioned Patrick McElhenney's two goals there, but one of them really was phenomenal, no doubt, has gone viral now at this stage, but I'm sure you probably already knew he had it in his locker.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously Patrick, his debut when he was 17 at Derry, and, you know, he's been really, really brilliant talent in the league for you know, a decade now. And he's, you know, he's been a joy to coach and manage, and, you know, it's great to, you know, I've seen so many goals over the years with that kind of quality, and he's been a great player for Dundalk over the last 5 years, and, you know, and for Derry City before that. So he deserves everything he gets, because he's been unlucky with injuries at critical times in his career, and you know, he's a great talent.
In the last week, there has been a lot of focus on football here in Ireland, and Keith Long and Stephen Bradley have both shone a spotlight on the lack of TV coverage of these games. Do you think getting these games on television is the solution to changing the perception of the league, and ultimately pushing it in the right direction?
Well, I would say that ultimately you want the big European games on TV. That's what you want. I think there's no doubt that traditionally normally the first round of the Champions League was always covered. You know, it was always on national television. And it wasn't this year. But all of the games the other night, for example, in the Aviva Stadium, Bohemian's three games, have been terrific in the Aviva. And I think the FAO have played a big role in that, in terms of working with the government and with Bohemians, because Bohemians didn't play in the Aviva since 1992, which is incredible for such you know, a successful club. They haven't played in the Aviva in nearly a 20-year period. And so those three games were terrific for the club. And I think that, you know, they could have all been on television as Shamrock Rovers game against Slovan Bratislava. But listen, I'm sure that will be all, you know, worked out over time, you know.
Yeah, hopefully now in the next leg we might get to see some of those games. One thing that Vinnie Perth mentioned in his interviews post-match last night was that the focus should be on improving the stadia, that the players rise to their surroundings almost, you know, that they enjoy playing in those big stadiums and everything looks better. Do you think that's important as well?
Well, yeah, it's a point that would have frequently made over the years. I think the perception of football, the perception of games, obviously the stadiums are very important. And there's no doubt about that. The games in the Aviva Stadium were terrific for the players, terrific for the crowd. And even the advancements in stadiums like Tallaght Stadium, certainly makes the game certainly a better spectacle for everyone.
As well, you have those huge games coming up in only a few weeks' time, really, Stephen, and you're going to be playing at the Aviva Stadium and you're going to have crowds there, which will be your very first time playing in front of crowds. That must be something that you're really looking forward to.
Yeah, no, it's amazing, really. I think it's going to be special, you know, for a lot of the players. You know, we've only had four games in the Aviva and so many players have made their international debut, and it's just magical. They want to experience it in front of their friends and family and supporters. You know, they dream about walking out in front of a full stadium, you know, not an empty one. And it's, you know, that will be, you know, well, it won't be quite full, the Aviva, for the games against Azerbaijan and Serbia. You know, there'll be tremendous crowds and, you know, people want to go and they want to shout and they want to get behind the team and they want to really be passionate about the support, and that's terrific, and people are very proud to support Ireland, and, you know, the players have missed the support, they've missed it, and they connect with it. The game itself is nothing without support. Like, you know, I think it's that level of passion evokes, you know, inspires the players to new heights, and that's what you want. You certainly want that. And so the players are really eagerly looking forward to that. Obviously, we go to the Algarve to play Portugal on the 1st, which is a great game for everyone. You know, a tough game out going to Portugal away. Then we play 3 days later at home in the Aviva, Azerbaijan, which is our first game with our home support, and we're really excited about that. And followed by the game against Serbia 3 days later at home. So two home games, and it should be special.
Yeah, and it's coming around so quick as well. Just on Jason Knight, do you know how his recovery is going, Stephen?
Yeah, his foot is in a boot at the moment, so it's been slow for Jason. Just unfortunate, as it's been slow for Linda. Linda Stevens isn't quite recovered from his problem that ruled him out of the camp in June. You know, he's still his recovery has been pretty slow, and he's not involved with Sheffield United. He's not back training fully yet. But on the plus side, Callum O'Dowda made brilliant strides, and he's someone that we've missed. You know, he missed several games, been a close contact actually, and then obviously tore his hamstring badly, and has missed quite a few games. And you know, he's a terrific talent, Callum, and he's a natural dribbler, natural winger, and he deserves it. But he deserves a run. Run a form at club level now. Bristol City play tomorrow, the championship. So he's had a very good pre-season, and hopefully Callum can start well.
The last time I was talking to you, you mentioned the importance of players getting as much game time as possible. I saw you at the game last night with Robbie Brady. How's his club situation looking?
Yeah, Robbie has been training very hard on his own and just obviously come back from an Achilles injury. And he's just assessing his options and he's hoping to make a decision pretty quickly, I think, and get back playing. And as he's a terrific player, Robbie. And, I think he can still be a huge asset to us over the next couple of years. No doubt about that. And hopefully, the more of our players that are playing, the better. And, you know, certainly some of them are amongst the goals in pre-season, which is good. And that gives us some optimism now. Hopefully they can maintain their place going into the season and start the season well.
Okay, well, it all sounds good anyway, Stephen, and it'll come around really, really quickly. Thank you so much for joining me. Enjoy the matches over the next few days, and hopefully we will catch up with you again soon.
Thank you.
Stephen Kenny there speaking to me a little bit earlier on. Stephen Kelly is with me in studio and Alan Cawley. And Stephen, the matches are coming around really, really soon there. Good to hear some positivity there from Stephen, but unfortunately it's not all positive. We see Robbie Brady without a club there, training on his own. I imagine that's difficult.
It is very difficult. I've been in that situation myself, and I don't think it'd be a lack of options. I'm sure he has options. They're not the ones he would want to have taken. That's probably the situation. It's probably a team less than what he would feel himself to stand out at, and I reckon that's what's going on, because at times you're in a situation, he's been injured for a little while, Achilles, teams are reluctant to probably offer him, but it's very hard to train your own. You have to be very determined and self-centered to be able to push yourself really, really hard to stay to that fitness level, that when you come back to training and playing with a team, you're not way off the pace, you can get back in and play straight away. I was in a position where I was able to do that, but you know, it's really hard. You have to have good people around you. So for me, Robbie, you'd be telling, listen, get back in and train with a team, get around the pitch, I'm sure he has physios and someone that's working with him on a one-to-one basis, but you can't beat being in an environment in a training ground. I ended up going training with Villa, which is when I got to know Grealish and all the lads after I did my Achilles, and being there brought me back to a really high level, and that's what you need. You need to be around people like-minded of the same stature as you.
And he has plenty of contacts in the game that someone would take him in at a club where he could go and train if that's what he wanted to do, and be around players, as Stephen said. I also think at the stage Robbie Brady's at as well, I think the financial side of things is secondary now. He needs to just concentrate on going to a club where he feels he's going to play. The money and the finances, as I say, that'll come. It's already come for him as well. He's in a position where I'd say Robbie's very comfortable. So I think if he wants to get back to the level that we did see with Robbie Brady, maybe back in the Euros, because he's been... Well, I would say he's been unlucky in terms of injury, but I don't think he kicked on himself either after the Euros. We had such great hopes for him. So it's a bit of both in that regard. But certainly when it comes to him and Stephen saying he can be part of our plans for the next couple of years, he needs to get to a club now and just concentrate solely on playing and where he's going to play, and play as many games as possible and not be worried about the financial side of things.
Yeah, because those games are coming really, really quickly. Those really important qualifiers. Stephen, you mentioned Jack Grealish there, someone that you know quite well, I think. What do you think of his move to Manchester City, also the record signing for England? Do you think it's justified?
I think the fee is crazy, and I just think that's football, though. You know, is it justified? And was Van Dijk justified when they spent 75 million at the time? No, you would have thought that's ludicrous, but now it's like a bargain. So in a few years from now, if Jack has been sensational for them, then the fee is worth it. As a talent goes, he's exceptional. Honestly, he is absolutely exceptional. The guy is just... he's so talented, he's so good, his mindset's so much better, you can tell he's improved mentally on and off the pitch. He's got into a mindset where he's willing to run through things, not be so thinking about off the field antics. He's more focused on what he's doing, and you know, there's probably no better team in the world for him to go and test them, because what Pep wants, what he demands from a player is the elite. It's a top level, and you know, he's going to the best team in the world, arguably the best coach in the world.
He's maturing as well, Marie, to be fair to him. Like, as the stuff Stephen says, he's saying maybe the off the field antics and stuff, and he was a kid, he's maturing now. I think Dean Smith, to be fair, probably done a lot of good work on him and given him the captain's armband and the responsibility that brought as well, and made him grow up a little bit quicker. And to be fair, I have to say, I would agree that the money's bonkers, as we know, but that's not his fault. But in terms of ability and going to Man City, I think he'll be even better with the players that are going to be around him. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing what he can do at Man City, because the talent is unquestionable. He's absolutely unbelievably talented, and I think Villa have been so reliant on him, and obviously he's been a big fish in that pond, but I think going into City with world class players around him, I actually think he'll grow even more in stature. I don't think he'll go into a shell and being around those great players. I think if anything, he's going to get even better, which is a crazy thought really for some of the other teams. And I hope he does. I'd love to think that he'll embrace this and go on and be even better than what we've seen already out of him. And I think working under Guardiola as well, the best coach in the world, I actually think he could get better.
Well, it definitely has so much to look forward to seeing him play with Manchester City, but I don't know, or I'm pretty sure now at this stage, that Lionel Messi is not going to be with him. Fergal Brennan is with us. Fergal, Pep Guardiola has said that Manchester United have spent so much money on Jack Grealish and they're clearly still in the hunt for Harry Kane, that Messi is not in their thoughts.
Yeah, Guardiola's played a fairly straight bat on Messi in all of this sort of nonsense, and stretching back over the last 12 months, I'd say almost every month he's been asked a question about Messi. Are City interested? Will they be making a move? Has there been contact made? And every single time that question has come up, he's just knocked it away and knocked it away. And I think based on his press conference this morning, there was maybe some expectation that there could be a little tweak or a little crack in his demeanour about Messi, but it hasn't. And obviously less than 24 hours after breaking the Premier League record, the British transfer record, to bring in Grealish, he's got an even bigger impetus to say, yes, the situation with Messi is complicated, but that involves Barcelona. I'm no longer manager of Barcelona Football Club. I've got no influence or impact in terms of what goes on there. And there is always going to be speculation because of the link between manager and player. He was the best player in Guardiola's most successful ever team. So that's always going to be there, and it will remain. But Guardiola has been very clear on this. He doesn't see Messi in his plans. They've just spent 100 million on Grealish. And as you say, Harry Kane could be upwards of 140, 150 million to bring him to the Etihad. He now looks to be the priority in the next few weeks.
And of course it is Manchester City, not Manchester United. Like I said, Alan, I must have Manchester United on the brain with you standing in front of me. But look, Alan, when you think about Messi, it's really hard to imagine him not playing for Barcelona. Mm. Like, all suggestions are that it's not completely finished yet, that there might be some way to get Messi to stay at Barcelona. There are clearly other things going on with the CVC deal and the financial fair play. Can you see a season without Messi at Barcelona?
Yeah, I actually, when this news broke last night, it's not that it came as a huge surprise, because we all knew the financial implications of what's going on, certainly, and the bumper contract and the money that has been on as well. So it didn't come as a massive surprise, but I thought there would be some sort of resolution around it, that he would stay at the club. And if that meant they were talking about deferring payments and spreading the wages over a longer period of time and stuff like that, I always thought there would be a resolution. It was actually sad to think that that was the end. How can such a player, who has brought so much joy to all of us over such a long period of time in that club and all he's done for them, and it was just a tweet and he's gone. Like, it's ridiculous when you think about it.
What did you want? What were you expecting?
Well, I wanted to see him sign off in style. Like I know it doesn't always happen like that for the heroes, but to think it was done over Twitter, does anyone even like Twitter? I think it was done over Twitter, Marie. Like, I just, honestly, I felt sad, because he's been, for me, I know we always get into debate, for me, he's been the best I've ever seen. He's been absolutely phenomenal over the years. And all he's done at that club, it can't end like that. It looks like it will. Where is he going to go? I think Guardiola was right to say he has Grealish. I think they're going to sign Kane as well. So that plan has been in the offing for a few weeks, regardless of Messi. Even though that came about last night, they weren't veering away from that. They'll get Kane as well, I think, which is scary for all the other teams. But where will he play? Where will he go? It'll be interesting to see. And I think he must be at the stage now, Messi, where he just say, look, I can play for free or whatever, you know?
Fergal, PSG, it's understood that they feel that they could be in a position to make it work with him, and particularly they're looking at what they can do with his brand and the market and I guess the jersey sales and all that sort of stuff. And they just feel, from a commercial point of view, spending the money on paying him would be worth it to them. Is that where you could see him going?
I think it's the most likely option. All along across the board with this in the last 12 or 18 months, it's either been PSG or Man City, and Guardiola's now pretty much said, no, it's not going to happen. So PSG have gone from being favourites to super favourites to sign him. And yeah, as you say, the jersey sales, the brand, the fact that, you know, they can just say, we have Lionel Messi in this team, and immediately that guarantees the pound signs or the euro signs just flashing up in front of the owner's eyes. Interestingly, I think it will arguably maybe be the move away for Kylian Mbappe. I think shoehorning Neymar, Mbappe, Messi, Di Maria, Icardi, Ramos, Donnarumma, Wijnaldum, all these players into that team is pretty much impossible. Mbappe's got 9-10 months left on his own contract. He clearly wants out. If they're able to shift his wages off the salary bill, Messi would come in obviously a bit more. But the interesting point in this now is any contract negotiations that Messi becomes involved in, whether that's PSG or somebody else, these clubs now know that he'll play for 60, 70% of his previous wages. So they now know that his wages from 18 months ago are not the starting point. That's going to be brought down. We're still talking about an incredible amount of money that he'll be paid, but PSG can now say, well, you're willing to accept this at Barcelona, we'll give you a little bit more, but we're not paying you what you were on 18 months ago.
kind of makes sense though when you think of the money that he has.
Yeah, the money should be irrelevant for him at this stage.
It's crazy. And to be honest, the Mbappe one is me. If I know Messi's coming on, like, I'm staying for another year.
He's obviously big buddies with Neymar already, so that I would agree with Ferg, that's the most likely in terms of the fact that he's friendly with a lot of those players, but the money side of things as well. But he should be at a stage now where I hope it gets sorted out with Barcelona somehow. Yeah, I don't know how it will, but hopefully it does.
Yeah. I think that as well. I think it's a power fight for Barca just to get, like, but you think they just offer him a contract over 20 years or something. He's already been
talking about already to get around this.
He's an ambassador or a coach when he finishes. You can imagine him just
never
leaving.
Yeah, just to guide his own children coming through, because he's a load of kids that will probably end up in the academy. But when, you know, when Fergal lays out the names there, like, it really does become clear how many of the big players are at the super clubs. And when you think of Grealish and Harry Kane, it's hard to argue with them really why they want to go to the really, really big clubs. But Kane today has tweeted, it was obviously reported during the week, so much hype about the fact that Kane hadn't gone to training and it was expected that he was going to turn up on Saturday, and he was getting quite a lot of abuse about it. Well, he's just tweeted and said that he's not going to go into the specifics of the situation. He clarified that he would never have refused to train. He will be returning to the club tomorrow. He added that it's been 10 years since he made his Spurs debut, and for every one of those, the fans have shown him such great support and love, and he's hurt by some of the comments that have been made this week questioning his professionalism. He said he'll never do anything to jeopardise the relationship he has with the fans, and he said that it's always been the case as it is today. He supports the club unwaveringly. Stephen, do you buy it?
No, not at all, not in the slightest. I think he... because of the way Tottenham operate, because of the way Daniel Levy operates, he had to make some sort of statement to them to show how determined he was to leave. That's basically what he did, and there's no way around that. Like, that's
because you actually said that during the Euros, didn't you?
He had to do something to make them believe that, because Levy will want it all his own way. He'll say, this is the figure we want, and if that's ridiculous and no one's going to spend on him, then Kane has to do something to get them to release him in another way. And by showing that he doesn't want to be there, he doesn't want to play for them anymore, it's going to hurt the Spurs fans. But realistically, can they think he's going to want to stay there anymore for what he's capable of achieving, what the team that's interested in City just signing Jack Grealish, and he's guaranteed a trophy. He is 100% guaranteed a trophy if he goes to Manchester City.
But this was done, Marie. He was gone before the Euros. This isn't a surprise now. Oh, he's leave. He's gone. He's done. He said he was done before the Euros. Obviously, he had to play in the tournament. This is where we're getting down to the nitty gritty of it now. It was always going to play out like this. I don't know why there's such an outrage that he never turned up for training. He should have turned up for training but that's what he should be doing. But as Stephen said, the only way he was going to force their hand is by not turning up. That's what they do now. The players end up so much power. And I'd say all that's going on in the background now is just the negotiating in terms of what's the fee. And by Daniel Levy realising, look, he never turned up for training, this, it just maybe strengthens his case in terms of asking for, we want 130 or 140 or whatever figure Fergal was bandying about earlier on, and which is ludicrous money. But it's done. I think this is done. Like, he's going to sign for Man City.
Fergal, last word to you. You've got your ear to the ground over there. Is it a done deal?
Not yet, but I do agree with the two guys that it's only a matter of time. I would say that the interesting thing is that the first game of the season is Tottenham against Man City. That will be the real test. If Kane means the words that he put in his tweet, that he doesn't want to damage his relationship with the fans and he would never refuse to train or play, he's going to have the ultimate acid test on the first weekend of the season when they play Manchester City. And I think that'll tell us exactly how the deal's going to play out.
The last thing, sorry Fergal and Marie, the one thing I'd say, his last line, whoever obviously wrote that for him, his last line, I wouldn't do anything to jeopardise the relationship I have with the fans. He's leaving in a week.
Right, well, those fixtures are hurtling towards us and we'll be previewing the Premier League next week. We do have a lot coming up on the rest of the show. We're going to have our usual Olympics Day 14 wrap. We'll also be looking ahead to the All-Ireland Hurling semi-finals and we'll be talking to Chris McNulty about Kelly Harrington going for gold. But first, let's hear from Jane Mangan. She is marking our weekend racing card.
Game on racing.
Yes, Marie, your sporting calendar probably has never been busier, but we have become accustomed to the fact that the international horse racing scene never ever stops. So on Saturday night at 10 past 10, all Irish eyes will be on the Saratoga Derby. We have three representatives. We have the Belmont Derby winner Bolshoi Ballet, Cadillac for Jessica Harrington, the International Stakes winner from the Curragh, and State of Rest for Joseph O'Brien. Joseph has booked Johnny Velasquez. Three realistic chances in that 9 furlong event run on quick turf ground at Saratoga. Bullshy Bally, you're likely a market leader here following his exploits in the Belmont Derby over 10 furlongs. And then Shane Foley, who's due to ride Cadillac, and Ryan Moore on Bullshy Bally. They will be flying home to the Curragh very quickly because they will want to contest the Phoenix Stakes on Sunday afternoon, where Go Bears Go, the Railway Stakes winner, hopes to confirm the form with Castle Star from that race. David Lochnan, very bullish about Go Bears Go. Ebro River in there for Hugo Palmer and Shane Foley. And Aidan O'Brien has the entertainer and prettiest. But I have a sneaky suspicion Castle Star will be best suited to slower ground and could get a little bit closer to Go Bears Go in the Phoenix Stakes at the Curragh on Sunday. And then cross channel to France, to Deauville. The Prix Morris's Geese looks like a brilliant renewal, where Commonwealth Cup winner Campanelle, Frankie Dettori and Wesley Ward's representative, meets Starman, the July Cup winner for Ed Walker and Tom Marquand. Ireland also have Laws of Indices and Thunder Moon in here. The 1-2 from the Prix Jean Prat. Ken Condon will be hoping his Laws of Indices can confirm the form with Thunder Moon, Joseph O'Brien's horse, where Maxime Guillon is likely to partner Thunder Moon. So while we are hoping to get more medals in Tokyo, we have international competition on the racing scene, and we will hopefully steal a few dollars along the way.
Your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. It's been a busy day in the Olympics as well. Day 14. It is coming to an end, but it's not quite there yet. And to wrap up all of today's action, here's Gary Moran in Tokyo.
Game On Olympic Updates with Circle K, who say, go Team Ireland, we're with you all the way. Circle K, proud partner of the Irish Olympic team.
Well, this certainly wasn't Team Ireland's best day at these games. Modern pentathlete Natalia Coyle finished 9th in London and 6th in Rio. She was 3rd coming into today following the fencing qualifying round and still 3rd after the fencing final. She dropped to 4th after swimming, but then came the show jumping. Oh dear. The horses are allocated randomly, and while Coyle wasn't eliminated in the show jumping, as 6 others were, including the competitor in the gold medal position, with some of the horses really playing up, her medal hopes were ruined as she picked up 37 faults and 29 time faults. She did complete the final run-shoot element of the competition, but her final ranking was 24th, and she was extremely disappointed afterwards.
It's just really upsetting because I was keen here to do a lot better, especially after the fencing. I really thought I was able to shout, and I thought I had some. I'd watched the girl go around before me, and she hadn't got through the treble, so I knew it was going to be trouble, but I thought I might be able to handle it. But obviously not, and just look, it's not the way I wanted to finish out my career, but hopefully I can look back in a day or two and be happy with at least coming third in the fence, I suppose.
Can you talk to us about the horse? Do you think it was up to the standards that should be here in the Olympics?
I think it's difficult in pentathlon because someone else has to ride it first, and she didn't get over the treble, so I knew it was going to be tough beforehand, but I thought I came in with a good plan. But I know one of the fences was definitely my fault at number 4, but I think just, I don't know, I thought I did everything right or gave enough encouragement, but obviously not. It's just hard when you're really close and then it's kind of snatched away from you.
That was Natalia Coyle with Paul O'Flynn. Still with horses and the team show jumping qualifier, Ireland's chances ended almost before they began when Alejandro, the horse being ridden by Shane Sweetenham, knocked a couple of fences and then collided with fence 9, with both horse and rider going down. With no discard scores allowed under the new format, Ireland decided not to continue. On to athletics. There was race walking in Sapporo and several track finals here in Tokyo. Greg Allen reports.
Well, it was a night of, you know, lots of excitement yet again. I think the women's 1500 metres is a starting point. You know, we had Sif and Hassan going for this extraordinary treble that she's trying for, the 5,000, the 1,500, and then the 10,000 tomorrow night. She's fallen at the second hurdle, so to speak, by only taking bronze in the 1,500 metres. But it was a stunning race.
It was a brilliant race. And when she was introduced to the crowd, she actually looked somewhat tired. And I rolled my nose. Is she human? And she was in the back straight. Faith Kipyegon matched her stride for stride until they came to the top bend when Faith Kipyegon took the lead. Laura Muir then passed out Hassan, and Kipyegon became double Olympic champion. It was a superb race, but Laura Muir was delighted with the silver medal too.
Oh, absolutely, and so richly deserved. Such a huge contributor to so many major championship races of quality over the years, and now an Olympic medalist, Laura Muir, also the European champion. Now, the women's 400 metres. Back in Rio, we saw Shaunae Miller-Weibo diving across the line at the last ditch moment to pip Alison Felix of gold. Today, totally emphatic, the victory of Shaunae Miller-Weibo, and only five women in history have run faster.
Yes, in fairness, Miller-Weibo was dominant and led basically from start to finish and increasing that lead coming down the home straight. Paulinho of the Dominican Republic took silver medals, and as you said, Alison Felix, 10 medals with the opportunity of 11 coming in the relay, which is yet to come.
And also for Felix, this 10th Olympic medal equals the record of Merlin Otte. No other woman in history has won more than 10. Both of them have now won 10, and Felix could take it to 11 in the relay in the 4x4 tomorrow. Certainly a stirring women's 400 metres, won by Shaunae Miller in 48.36 seconds. Super fast. Men's 5,000, Joshua Cheptegei, so much expected of him. The world record holder at the 5,000 and 10,000, surprisingly somewhat beaten in the 10,000 metres. Emphatic though, the victory today for Cheptegei.
Yes, and from the onset, you could see, I think they were fearful of Ketter of Spain and his fast finishing, but it was a combination of a Kamili of Kenya, Jacob Kiplimo of Uganda, and Cheptegei kept the pace very strong right throughout and finished with a 3:59 last mile.
Yeah, and you know, we also saw these relays, which were at the very end of the night, deep into the night. A bit of a controversial moment in the women's 4x1, as we thought the first baton change went wrong, but Jamaica still took it with a couple of wobbly moments in baton changes, and they won it nearly in a world record.
Yeah, the dream team, as you mentioned, it's you know, some schoolboy mistakes on the second leg, but they had enough artillery and power to storm hold. Disappointed that they didn't break their Olympic record, you could tell that.
Yeah, only 0.2 off the world record as well, even with ropey baton changes. The men's 4x100 metre relay, deprived of a very poor American performance in the semi-final, and so no Americans in the final, so it's wide open, and Britain had the gold medal about 3 metres from the line, but it wasn't to be theirs.
Mitchell Brake, he was putting his medal around his neck and he somehow tied up, and it was the Italian Tortu who just got him. The 23-year-old just pipped him on the line for a new Italian national record and a victory by 1/100 of a second.
And the early race of the day, very early, 5:30 start local time in Sapporo for the men of the 50k walk. Brendan Boyce finished 10th. We thought around the 34-kilometre mark his race was over, and then he rallied. Like, he's so tough.
Toughest teak, Brendan Boyce. The resilience, his ability to keep going in this arduous race, which was a race of attrition. And you know what? At the end of the day, he should be very, very proud of a top 10 finish and Alex Wright in 29th, the season's best.
And just to tell you as well that some inclement weather descending on the Tokyo area over the next, indeed, the Sapporo area over the next few days. So the women's marathon tomorrow is going to be at 6 a.m. local time. That's 10 o'clock Irish time tonight.
After the third round of the women's golf tournament, world number one Nelly Korda from the States has a 3-shot lead on 15 under par. Once again, Stephanie Meadow had a very strong finish to her round, birdie-birdie on 17 and 18 for a 3 under par 68. She is on 7 under, which is 3 shots off the bronze medal position. So she has a chance of making up that ground. Leona Maguire was charging through the field 4 under for the round after 8 and won off the bronze at that stage, which she triple bogeyed the 9th and ended up on 5 under. after 5 off bronze with 1 round to go. In track cycling, Emily Kay and Shannon McCurley were in the Madison event, but McCurley was involved in a crash, and effectively that was that. In that Madison race, though, Laura Kenny was part of the British team that won gold, and she now has golds from 3 successive games and 5 golds in all. Elsewhere, the Netherlands regained their women's hockey title with a 3-1 win over Argentina. They really are one of the most dominant sides in any sport.
Right, speaking of being dominant, we've been following Kelly Harrington all through this Olympic Games, and she has been doing sensational. And on Sunday morning at 6 a.m, she will be fighting for the gold. Chris McNulty, boxing journalist, is with us now on the line. Chris, can she do it?
She can, of course, Marie. You know, this is well within Kelly Harrington's reach. She's performed on the big stage before. She's in the form of her life, injury-free, but that comes with a huge caveat, Marie. This is going to be the biggest test of Kelly Harrington's career. It's on the biggest stage of all, the Olympic Games final. And, you know, Beatrice Ferreira on Sunday morning brings, you know, a lot of people probably haven't heard of Beatrice Ferreira, but her pedigree is such, you know, Kelly Harrington's the number one seed in the lightweight for these Olympic Games. But Ferreira, the Brazilian, came into these games. She was the bookies' favourite, and she's also the number one ranked lightweight boxer in the world. She has medaled at most championships. She's been on the podium for 29 of the last 30 championships. This is the 30th championship in the last sort of 4.5 years that she's entered. She's been on the podium for 29 of them. And in Tokyo so far, she hasn't lost a card on any round from any judge. That's over 3 fights, 15 judges. That's 45 cards, and all of them have been in her favour. So, you know, this really, really is going to be a huge, huge test for Kelly Harrington.
So what does she need to do then to try and get the better of someone like Beatrice Ferreira? You have told us all about her there, and I think a few people will have watched her in action as well. She looks like a pretty frightening prospect.
Yeah, she is, and she's quite an aggressive boxer. Like, she's a real sort of come-forward boxer, and I suppose that's reflected in the cards. Like, she's won everything in unanimous decision. We saw her absolutely demolish Mira Putkonen in the semi-final, and, you know, all of us in Ireland know all about Putkonen and stuff like that. So Kelly, as she said herself after her own semi-final win over Sunday the other day, patience was key. Patience was her friend in the semi-final, and that's going to be key again. She just has to sort of stay behind the jab, pick her shots. And the big, big thing for Kelly Harrington against a fighter like Ferreira is staying out of trouble. Because Ferreira has that ability to really cause her a bit of trouble. But look, as I said at the outset, this is within Kelly Harrington's reach. She's an extremely difficult boxer herself. Like, she interchanges so smoothly between orthodox and southpaw. Not many boxers can do that with sort of that flick of a light switch that Kelly Harrington has. So as much as Ferreira will be a real test for Kelly Harrington, the same goes the other way about. And, you know, Zor Ante and John Connellan, Zor said the other day, they go into every fight with maybe 3 sets of tactics for it. And, you know, we just don't know what Kelly Harrington's going to do. But I suspect we will see more of the same, the patience, you know, just sort of staying at distance, picking those shots smartly, getting in and getting back out cleanly again. But Kelly Harrington, she has to do, I think as well, she has to embrace this chance and not sort of be burdened by the occasion as much and all. Like, she's 9 minutes from immortality here. She's 9 minutes from an Olympic gold medal. She's 31 years of age. This chance probably will not be before Kelly Harrington again, maybe in 3 years' time in Paris. But she has to take this as if this is her, you know, this is her last shot at it. And, you know, she did say the other day she's not afraid of failure. And I thought that was a great way of sort of looking at it, that she has the Olympic medal now and a chance to upgrade the colour of it. So she's got to go in and basically deliver the performance of her life here.
Yeah, well, it has been a highly entertaining Olympic Games, and it'll be a great way to end it, and we'll all be behind her. Chris McNulty, thank you so much for joining us. Alan and Stephen are still in studio with me. Are you getting up on Sunday morning at 6 o'clock, lads?
I'll be up.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Good. I think everybody will be. Right, we're going to take a very quick break. Then Shane McGrath will join us for hurling.
Game on. With Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So, it's hard to believe, but we are in our second last hurling weekend of the season. It's just flying by. Yesterday, we previewed Limerick versus Waterford with Ryan O'Dwyer. So, today, we are turning our attention to Cork and Kilkenny. And Shane McGrath is with us on the line to go through that game. Shane, it is one that a lot of pundits are finding really difficult to figure out who is going to win, to even make a decision on who's going to win. But one thing everybody seems to be sure of is that Kilkenny are going to go at Cork for the 70 minutes. And the big question is, will Cork be able for it?
Yeah, Marie, and how are you lads as well? I suppose it's like that age-old saying, isn't it? It's like a deaf dog, which is a hard one to call. So I think this is what is going to happen at the weekend as well. They're very, very evens, and anybody who's talking about it. But I think if you look down through the years, and if you're going with what's happened in previous times, I suppose, first of all, Brian Cody's record in semi-finals, absolutely unbelievable. I think this is his 21st one. He's lost three, lost to Galway in 0-1, Galway in 0-5, he lost to Waterford last year. So, first of all, Brian Cody knows how to win All-Ireland semi-finals. The other thing is, say, is Cork having beaten Kilkenny in Croke Park, the last time they beat them was 2004. And, you know, so you're looking at all these things, and when it's very, very close, you're just thinking, will they have the edge in them? But then I was actually looking, Marie, at the teams that the last time they played in the quarterfinal in 2019. And, like, Cork got 3-18 that day, and Pat Horgan got 3-10 in his own, and they'd only five scorers. Like, whereas now, if you look at their team, Tim O'Mahony's popping up with scores, Mark Coleman, Darragh Fitzgibbon, Luke Mead, you know, Harnedy, Robbie O'Flynn, Shane Kingston, Jack O'Connor, and then you've Shane Barrett and Alan Connolly. So there's 9 or 10 lads that are scoring regularly from. So that's a plus from. The other thing is, and I suppose maybe this is the reason why these two teams are in the semi-final, how they've evolved their team since 2019. And I think this is a testament to the way the game has gone. Kilkenny, I was just looking at their team, and their probable team that will start, there was 8 out of the 15 of them playing in 2019 starting. And out of the Cork team that will probably start, there was only 6 of the 15 of them. So that'll tell you've two completely different teams, almost two completely different groups. And, you know, while it's a very, very hard one to call, you know, I think Cork have done a lot this year, and they're on the crest of a wave, Cork hurling and everything, and they're bringing Olympic golds back and everything down there. So it's the People's Republic, you know. But I just feel Kilkenny, something is telling me that Kilkenny just know how to win these games. And I think the hurt that they would have last year as a group from losing to Waterford might just be a factor in tipping it for them too.
It's strange to be in an All-Ireland semi-final situation and to be speaking so little about Kilkenny, really. Like, it is the other teams that the focus are on, which would probably suit Kilkenny down to the ground. But there have been a lot of arguments made for Cork as well, and just the fact that they have unbelievable speed and just trying to contain, and not one but several players who will just run at you and be past you before you even know it, particularly Jack O'Connor. Just how Kilkenny are going to be able to handle that, because their season so far, like, okay, they had that tough game against Wexford, but they probably won't have had to handle anything like what they're going to face at the weekend.
Yeah, it's true. And I suppose, like, what other team could be, say, giant league champions, could be Leinster champions, and still no one is really saying anything about them. Like, I only think Kilkenny could actually get away with it because of the way they go about their business. There's very little fuss. Like, you know, they beat Wexford after extra time, thrilling game, that's fine. Beat Dublin the last day, and I suppose the biggest talking point was the fact that Dublin were missing the lads through COVID and Owen O'Donnell went off with injury. There was nothing about the fact that Kilkenny actually won the Leinster final. So I think Kilkenny are coming to it in a great place. You know, no one has really given them any credit, and they're in an All-Ireland semi-final, and they're performing like one of the top teams in the country. But you're right, Marie, I suppose they're coming up against a team that maybe they haven't yet, like Jack O'Connor. We all see the speed he has, you know, the goals first thing in his mind, even against Clare today, the way he rounded Rory Hayes, who would be one of the top defenders and would be one of the fastest guys over 20 yards, just left him for dead in the Gaelic grounds that night, hung it up in the net. And then the next ball he got, he wasn't happy to just tap it over the bar, wanted to go for goal again, and Avery Quilligan made a great save. Like, and this guy wants goals, like, you know, and Cork want goals. Like, that's very evident in all the games they play. They want two or three green flags to get over the line. And, you know, if it's not happening for one of the forwards, then you bring on Shane Barrett or Alan Connolly, who are contributing as well. Like, even, you know, they're chipping in with the scoreboard all the time. They're real, real impact subs. And I think it's another kind of thing to say that a lot of inter-county managers now want to finish with their best team, maybe rather than start with it. Like, and that's the way it is. But again, like, just Kilkenny, you know, I suppose like when you go out and played Kilkenny maybe 10 or 15 years ago, Marie, the game was nearly over before it began, because you'd look around the field and this, the names that they'd have, and maybe nowadays people are going in and they're looking around and maybe they're not as phased, and then it's 20, 25 minutes into a game they realise, geez, this is a serious group, like, and it's maybe too late. So what I'm trying to say is why there mightn't be the same fear factor. I just don't think they're getting the credit they deserve or the respect that they deserve, because maybe they don't have the All-Irelands yet like that the group before them had. But I mean, like, who they can, like, you know, John Donnelly, Massey Cohan, Billy Ryan, Owen Cody, Alan Murphy, and of course TJ, they're thereabouts, they're starting forward, but it's the lads they're bringing on that are finishing out the games, like Michael Carey. James Maher, I thought, was brilliant the last day. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't start. You know, you've Killian Buckley to come on, Conor Fogarty, Wally Walsh, and Richie Hogan. Like, we haven't seen Richie yet, but I mean, what a guy to bring on, you know, just takes minding, like, so two serious groups, like, you know, but I don't know. It's a very, very difficult one to call, but I'm going to go for Kilkenny and Marie, just the way they're coming into it, nice and quiet, they're getting their job done. I think Cork are in a really good place, but you know, it's a massive test for a lot of their team and a lot of their panel coming up to Croke Park, maybe representing Cork for the first time at senior level. And who you're playing, Kilkenny, the hurling team that plays the most in Croke Park, really, like.
Yeah, but one thing, another thing that Cork will have going for them as well is the fact that it seems now, when you compare it to maybe just 2018, 2019, when people were saying they were a little bit flaky, a little bit soft, it seems that they do have a little bit more steel and resilience, and they're things that you do need when you are facing Kilkenny. So it'll be interesting to see just even that be tested, and by the end of the 70 minutes, I think we are going to know a huge amount more about the two teams. But what about the other two teams, very quickly before we go, Shane? Yeah. So we have Limerick and Waterford coming up against each other. Limerick are obviously going in as overwhelming favourites, but there is a narrative out there that the one team Limerick wouldn't want to face in a semi-final is Waterford.
Yeah, yeah, I think it is. And I think even, you know, you talk about the teams changing as well. Like a Limerick team is, the Limerick team that's starting is basically as is, bar Peter Casey is coming in for Graham Mulcahy. Same team starting got in the final last year. So, you know, it's a testament to all of them, the way they mind themselves, that they have their, more or less, their best team. Like, whereas if you look at Waterford, like, not even from the All-Ireland final last year, even from the first round of the championship this year, they have a new goalkeeper. The only person who's still in the full back line is Shane McNulty. The only person who's still in the half back line is Caelum Lyons. They have a totally new midfield, and in the forwards, like, there's a bit of jigging around, but I mean, Shane Bennett's now gone back to centre back, and Patrick Curran has kind of come in and established himself. But again, like, a serious, serious bench. You have the likes of, say, Neil Montgomery, Mikey Kearney, Mikey Kiley, these guys coming in making a big difference all the time. So I think Waterford would have learned an awful lot from last year, from the All-Ireland final. Mikey Beavins definitely would. I think they're 3.25 from play the last day against Tip. They were by far the better team throughout the game. Tip nearly got it back. But it's just very hard to look past Limerick, Marie, isn't it? Like, I just think they're awesome. Their efficiency with the ball, like, everyone knows what they did to Tip in the third quarter, you know, it was hard to see. But, like, they took 13 shots and they scored 11 times. 1-10 to a point in that third quarter. That's what they can do to you. And that's what the potential they have. And I just feel, when they get to Croke Park, we haven't seen a full team performance from Marie yet. Okay, you know, they were good against Cork, won by 8 points. They were good for periods against Tip, especially the second half. I just feel if they perform for 60, 65 minutes as a whole team, and with the guys to come in and finish off the job as well, I just think Croke Park could be the place they're going to do it. So I just think they're awesome. I think the Limerick people have to realise they have a golden generation and a golden team right now, and to enjoy every minute of them, because yep, you mightn't see the quality of them again for a while.
Shane, are you playing?
They definitely are. Shane, they're a very special team, but look, we will know on Monday, or we'll know on Sunday evening, who are going to be our All-Ireland finalists. We'll also know whether or not Kelly Harrington has won the gold medal at the Olympics, and we'll know who won the Lions test. Alan, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. I'll be back tomorrow, because with that Lions game is live here on 2FM from 4:45. Bernard Jackman is with me in studio. Michael Corcoran and Donal Lennon are on commentary duty from South Africa. Lads, thank you so much for joining us. We better go. It's been a very busy show, and there's plenty more to come on 2FM. Up next is the official chart show with Blona Tracy. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide. 2FM.